Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, August 20th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Senator Amy Klobuchar makes a push to fight sex trafficking. Minneapolis moves closer to a vote on the Southwest LRT line, and a big road project snarls traffic in the East Metro. Medtronic says it's pressing forward with a plan to buy an Irish medical device maker despite political heat, Matt Sepik reports.
The $43 billion deal to buy Covidien would let Medtronic move its legal headquarters from the Twin Cities to Dublin to take advantage of Ireland's lower corporate tax rates. That's drawn criticism from some Democrats, including President Obama, who say so-called tax inversion arrangements are unpatriotic. But medtech analyst Joanne Wench with BMO Capital Markets says taxes aren't the main reason why Medtronic wants to buy Covidien.
I think this is a strategic bundling event or cross-selling event for the company. I think this is a response to the changing healthcare landscape, particularly in the United States.
Medtronic CEO Omar Ishrak says the deal will expand the company's product line and its presence in overseas markets. Medtronic says if the deal goes through, it'll invest $10 billion in its U.S. operations and will continue to pay many other U.S. taxes. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A Twin Cities restaurant group that drew fire for reducing its employees' tips to make up for a hike in the minimum wage is reversing course. Tim Nelson has more.
The Blue Plate Restaurant Company runs 8 full-service restaurants in the Twin Cities. This month, Blue Plate started deducting credit card fees from waitstaff tips, estimated to be about 2% of their tips. The change sparked a wave of criticism and came at the same time a Stillwater restaurant started adding 35-cent minimum wage fees to every check. Owner David Burley says Blue Plate has dropped the controversial charge and will also raise the pay for non-tipped staff to $9.69 an hour starting September 1st. That's a premium above the state's current $8 an hour minimum wage, which went into effect August 1st. Co-owner Stephanie Schimp says the company was responding to diners' concerns about the changes. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar is sponsoring legislation that would encourage states to pass bills similar to Minnesota's Safe Harbor law to combat sex trafficking of minors. Minnesota's law treats sexually exploited children as victims rather than criminals. Klobuchar says her bill would provide incentives to states that adopt similar legislation.
The reason we know it works, it's in about a dozen states right now, is that states have been able to so effectively bring better cases when the victims know they themselves won't be prosecuted, that they're going to get help instead of being sent to jail. Then they're much more willing to really go after the people that put them in this place in the first place and the people that run this sex trafficking ring.
As evidence of tougher prosecutions, Klobuchar cited a 40-year sentence for a sex trafficker handed down in Ramsey County in January. The proposed Southwest Light Rail line connecting Minneapolis to Eden Prairie faces a critical vote next week. The Minneapolis City Council will decide whether to endorse the project. Supporters and opponents packed a public hearing last night to make their final cases to the council. Curtis Gilbert has the story.
More than a month after negotiators from Minneapolis and the Metropolitan Council struck a tentative deal to allow Southwest Light Rail to move forward, the project remains deeply divisive among Minneapolis residents. Opponent David Rubeck sees it as a poorly planned boondoggle.
This process has been a snowballing mass of bad decisions, missed opportunities, and wasted money.
The project's price tag is projected to exceed $1.6 billion. Half of which would come from the federal government. Supporters say that investment is too big for Minneapolis to pass up. Russ Adams is executive director of the Alliance for Metropolitan Sustainability, and he urged the council to vote yes.
Particularly if you believe in growing the population of Minneapolis, and if you believe in building vibrant, thriving local economies, and if you believe in closing the equity gap.
The equity gap is shorthand for the persistent disparities between the city's white and minority populations. A coalition of groups representing minority communities rallied behind the line because of its potential to create jobs. But Russell Palma, who lives right next to the proposed line, says advocates have oversold its potential benefit to the city's impoverished north side.
To pretend the proposed alignment will create significant North Minneapolis ridership flies in the face of geography and logic.
The three planned stations in North Minneapolis are in sparsely populated areas and are projected to attract far fewer riders than the suburban stops along the line. But Northside activist Mel Reeves says voting no isn't the answer.
I know that once the power structure decides they want to do something, it's pretty much going to get done. So from that perspective, I say that if the train's definitely coming, let's make sure that everybody can get on board.
Reeves says that means improving overall transit options so more people of color can get to the stations. Both supporters and opponents see Southwest Light Rail gaining momentum as it heads to a vote next week. If the council does back the project, it'll represent a remarkable turnaround. Just 5 months ago, the council voted to oppose running light rail trains alongside an existing freight line as they passed between Cedar Lake and Lake of the Isles. But the city failed to force a reroute of the freight trains. Instead, it negotiated $30 million worth of improvements to its portion of the line, as well as assurances that the land underneath the freight tracks would stay publicly owned. But Mary Paddock, who lives near the proposed route, says that's little consolation. She urged the council to reject the deal.
If you allow the Met Council, and to that I will add Hennepin County, to tread roughshod over Minneapolis now, you will have set a political precedent that will lead inexorably to the turning of our beautiful city of lakes into a mere suburban utility.
The Hennepin County Board voted yesterday to back the deal. Paddock and other opponents aren't giving up, though. They've hired high-powered lawyers who argue the Met Council needs to do additional environmental studies before it can secure the city's permission to proceed with Southwest Light Rail. The lawyers haven't ruled out filing a lawsuit if Minneapolis votes yes. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Summer construction in Minnesota is hard on a lot of people, but it's been really hard on drivers in the East Metro as a section of Interstate 35E in St. Paul is undergoing a major reconstruction. The $230 million project aims to cut down gridlock between downtown St. Paul and 694. Peter Cox takes a closer look at what's ahead.
While new lanes are under construction, the old 35E has two concrete-lined lanes running north and south for several miles. Drivers find few outlets to exit. The idea is to allow commuters to move as quickly as possible between the north suburbs and St. Paul, but for people living near the construction zones, it's a different story. Judy Havel commutes daily from Little Canada to just north of downtown St. Paul. Before the major construction along the corridor, she'd hop on 35E at Little Canada Road and be at work in a few minutes. But the entrance and exits near her house are closed for construction, keeping her off the highway.
My commute luckily starts at 5 in the morning, so there's very little. But on the way home, sometimes it's not till 4, and it's crazy. My 8-minute commute went to 25 minutes.
Havel may not know it, but she's part of a balance that MnDOT and its contractor Ames Construction have had to strike. With exits closed, the contractor has to deal with less traffic and can focus more on construction. That can save MnDOT money on the contract and shorten the project timeline. Dale Gotti is a MnDOT engineer for Ramsey County.
You do have local roadway users and you do have the regional roadway users that you're trying to balance their different interests on.
When it's finished in 2015, the stretch of 35E will have more lanes, several new bridges, and a replacement for a sometimes hazardous entrance near downtown. Gotti says the current ramps are too close to where 94 and 35E connect. So the entrance moves north.
It was basically a hard merge. By moving the access issues over to Cayuga, it allows for those merge lanes and tapers to occur in a much more gentler fashion.
The new entrance is under construction now. MnDOT expects it to be finished in 2015. Throughout the corridor, four overpass bridges have been replaced. MnDOT's also working on a new interchange with Highway 36 and 35E. One big reason behind all the reconstruction is the addition of lanes dedicated to buses, carpools, and MnPass users. Right now, about 25,000 people pay to use MnPass lanes on 35W and on I-394. Lee Munich is a senior fellow at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the U. He's studied MinPass and says it adds enough traffic to the carpool and bus lanes to help ease traffic in regular lanes.
By and large, all the indicators that we've looked at have shown that the lanes have worked well. My suspicion is that people will probably find it beneficial in that corridor as well.
St. Paul City Council member Amy Brenmone says she hasn't heard too many complaints about traffic in her ward, which covers both sides of the corridor. She hopes the new exchange at Cayuga will decrease gridlock and that the project helps with economic development in the corridor.
I also think that it could open up some opportunities for some industrial development on that close to the highway stretch. And we can always use that sort of tax base. And it's in a lot of ways, it's underutilized at this time. So if that's a bonus, we'll take it.
By winter, MnDOT expects to have three lanes open in each direction and reopen most of the ramps. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.